Does acting matter? David Thompson, one of our most respected and insightful writers on movies and acting, tackles this question in his new book, Why Acting Matters. It is now out from Yale University Press. Probing deeply into this most elusive of subjects, Thompson examines the allure of the performing arts for both artist and audience while addressing the many paradoxes inherent in acting itself. It's a great pleasure to welcome David Thompson to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you for asking me.
In asking that question of answering the question of why acting matters, what brought you to that point?
Well, I've been watching movies since I was 4 or 5, and I've watched a great deal of theater in the same time, too. And normally, I write about a particular performance, a particular film, but what Yale challenged me with was the possibility of reflecting on the whole thing, and very quickly I felt that it was not just a natural thing for me to do, but a necessary thing, and it was an enormous pleasure doing it because I was able to bring together a whole lot of experiences from the past. And really, I think the main point is that critics and reviews tell us when we go to see a film that we go to see the director at work, or we go to see the play, the playwright, the text. But I think in practice, most people go most of the time to watch people pretending with skill and finesse, daring and great emotion, because we are fascinated by watching pretenders and by imagining ourselves with them in the play, in the part. And I think it's one of the essential mainsprings of creative culture, watching people trying to do their best being someone else.
What do you think it is, not only about us wanting to watch someone be someone else, but for the actor, that physical act of spending a certain period of your life, whether on stage or in screen, to pretend and to be someone else?
Well, I think it draws upon a very special, quite strange aspect of character. We grow up with the parental advice, the educational advice of being true to ourselves. But actors, not all of them necessarily, but a lot of them, are driven by a true need to pretend to be other people. I've met actors in their real life who are kind of dull, kind of passive, inactive. They can't talk very well. And they're used to reading great lines, good lines anyway, and they love that whole business of putting on a character the way you put on a coat. And I do think in many cases it reflects an insecurity and something like an emptiness in themselves. I think a lot of great actors are actually not very interesting people.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I think to a degree we all feel inadequate. We all feel that we have failed, and we do different things to try to compensate. We make a family, we make a house, we make a job, we try to fill our time. But some people are really driven to this extraordinary act of pretense for which they train and prepare themselves all their lives. And what's even more remarkable, we know the great famous actors by name, but there, for every one of those, there are 20, maybe 50 actors we have never heard of. That's to say, people who were determined as very young people that they would act. And they went into the profession despite every warning that it was a tough, tough profession. And they have not succeeded in the sense that they've not become famous. They have not earned enough money. But they are still devoted and dedicated to it. That is a quite remarkable thing.
When you think of the range of actors that we have, and you look at films that are being lauded during award season versus a commercial film that makes lots of money, usually those are two very different lists. What does it say about the actors involved of someone who is interested in being in a, say, smaller film and to go more a route of art than someone who is looking to say, I want to be seen by millions of people and hopefully my film will have an opening weekend of $90 million?
Well, you've begged a lot of questions there, in my opinion. I don't think there are very many movies that open and get reviewed over which some people aren't intensely concerned about their making money. It may not be money on the same scale, but it's still an important part of it. And a lot of actors move from one kind of film to another throughout their careers. And you know, you take Marlon Brando. He made some mainstream films like The Godfather, big money maker, the biggest money maker at the time it opened. And he also made some films that probably the general public has never heard of. They were very small films, didn't get much of an opening. And I think the actor has a lot of problems to deal with. He needs to make that living I talked about. But also he knows that a lot of the things offered to him are not that good. So when something comes along that feels good, then he's very excited. However, remember this. We probably think of Brando as Vito Corleone more than anyone else. When that film was finished, he thought it would be a failure. And he traded back his points on the film for immediate cash. In other words, actors can see themselves and not always know how well it's going to work.
We're speaking to David Thompson. The name of the new book is Why Acting Matters. You tell an amazing story in this book and use it as an illustration about Daniel Day-Lewis, and I'm hoping you can share some of that with us about what it is about him and his experiences, because we've heard a lot about him. Here's an actor who has won Academy Awards for his performances, most recently in Lincoln, a method actor who embodies the part from the very start of the project to the end of the project.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, first of all, I would say I think he is a really great actor, one of the best we have around. And as you said, he works in a kind of method-related way, which is to attempt to lose himself in the part. And people who've worked with him say that even when you talk to him off-set or off-stage, the character will answer, which is pretty odd sometimes. Well, at one point in his career, he was doing as much stage work as movie work. And he was asked by the National Theatre in London to do Hamlet. And being asked to do Hamlet by the National Theatre is a measure of real respect and significance. So he rehearsed. And as he got deeper into the part, and as he found himself in the part, he seems to have become increasingly disturbed by Hamlet's nature. And in particular, Hamlet's love of his dead father struck a note with Day-Lewis. His father had died quite a long time before, many years before. But he felt that he was really relating to his own father. Well, the play starts its run, and one night, he is stricken dumb on stage, and he walks off in the middle of the performance. There was a pause, and then his understudy, Jeremy Northam, came on and did a superb job. Daniel Day-Lewis has never again appeared on stage, and we're talking about something that happened 20 years ago. That's the story, and it shows you just how dangerous acting can be, just how far you can really get into the deeper recesses of your own soul and your own psyche.
Having interviewed many, many actors, it's always fascinating to me in asking the question of looking for the next job and looking for the next opportunity, and how many actors, and no matter what range of success, of how many of them do want to be on stage. I'm curious as to your thoughts on if there is a caste system, if you will, of what a hierarchy in acting, that one is above the other, that if you are able to command that stage, that is more of an opportunity and a personal triumph than it would be to act in an motion picture.
Well, I think in many acting circles, particularly in Britain, that is the case. I think that excellence on stage is regarded more highly than excellence on film. I'm not sure that's a fair thing, because just as there are certain movie actors who are unthinkable on stage, I mean, think of John Wayne, for instance.
Right.
I don't believe John Wayne could have played a part on stage. But equally, there are great stage actors who have never really understood the camera. Laurence Olivier said often in his life, and he had a pretty successful film career too, but he said often in his life, I just don't quite get film acting. I don't get how you have to do so much less than you do on stage, because this apparatus can see into you in a way that really you can't do if you're watching a play. You cannot really see enough of the face to feel your inside, whereas, of course, movies changed acting. They changed what audiences expect from acting. And there is a caste system, I think. It's rather like the caste system that used to obtain between film and television.
Mm.
For a long time, movie actors didn't want to do television because they thought it was a sort of lower class operation. That has changed because television has become probably a whole lot more exciting now than the movies we make.
When it comes, obviously it depends on the actor, but when it comes to choosing a role for an actor, what matters do you think in that process of choosing something that they want to do? I mean, some people obviously are working so they can work, but other people have many projects before them and they can choose what they want to do. What do you think goes into that process?
Well, it's a gamble because film and theater are alike in that they are collaborative ventures. And when you say you're interested, you will have read a script. But particularly with the movies, that script could change a lot. And of course, the chances of success depend upon who's going to direct, who's going to act in it with you. And I think every time an actor commits, they are taking a bit of a gamble. And obviously, they have to consider how much money is being offered, because any actor will tell you, they're like athletes, that they can be riding the wave, and then in a matter of days, a weekend, they lose their touch. They're terrified of that. And movie actors are terrified of losing their looks. So, you know, it's a creative decision what you're going to do, but it's a very perilous, practical, professional thing too. And also, this bears upon another point. casting is absolutely vital. We identify certain parts, movie parts, because somebody took that part. And I talk in the book about how Brando is known for The Godfather, and for heaven's sake, he gives a superb performance. But the fact of the matter is that he was not the first choice by the studio. Other people like Robert Mitchum, Frank Sinatra were considered. They sound impossible, but that's because we've got Brando in our heads. Laurence Olivier was thought of for the part. Now you could say, well, how on earth is Laurence Olivier going to play a Sicilian gangster? Well, I would only say to that Olivier was good enough as an actor to surprise you. He played a lot of very unlikely parts, and casting is the moment where an actor begins to become that person, and it can amaze us. Many films, all plays, work with different people playing the lead. There have been 100 great Hamlets, for instance. Vito Corleone, however, is locked up with the history of Marlon Brando.
Just taking off from the title of why acting matters, does acting matter as much if we're talking about a regional production of Guys and Dolls at a summer stock company in Detroit, Michigan, versus Helen Mirren on Broadway playing Queen Elizabeth versus Michael Keaton in Birdman?
I think it does. I know it matters as much to the actors and the audience in that small regional theater. Obviously, different productions, different actors work on different stages, and historically, and by the measure of fame, Helen Mirren matters more than Anne Smith, who may be playing a very important part in Rutland, Vermont, let's say.
Yes.
You can't compare the two. You can't balance them. And if it's going to work, it works for the audience, 100 people maybe, crowded into a small theater, and it works for Anne Smith doing that job. So yes, I think it is. I think any actor simply wants to work. And the worst thing for those actors who will not become famous is they don't get enough work. Mm. If you're a writer, you can write in your room. All you need is a pen and paper. If you want to act, you need a production. A certain amount of money goes into that. It needs a theater. It needs a text, a play. Not many actors have succeeded at writing plays. If they could, their life might become a lot easier.
I brought up Helen Mirren and was just thinking of that because I'd read a piece in the New York Times, a profile of her starring in the play The Audience. And of course, she won an Oscar for playing Queen Elizabeth.
For playing the Queen, yeah.
And she talked about the great resistance and reluctance she had in doing a play because she had felt she had really nailed it in a film and was reluctant to say, okay, this is something I want to do in a play. I got it right the first time. Do I want to do it again and take the chance of screwing it up?
Yeah, well, you know, there are extraordinary stories about actors becoming trapped in a part.
Right.
Yul Brynner played the king in The King and I over 4,000 times. And he survived, but that's an immense ordeal to have to do the same thing night after night. And I can understand that if you've succeeded in one form with a part, it is challenging to do it again. There's also the fact that in Britain, once upon a time, not that long ago, you go back to, the 1960s, 70s, I think, no one had ever played a living member of the royal family on stage. It was thought to be tasteless and an intrusion. There are still people, I think, who believe that that's a questionable thing for an actor to do.
You mentioned Hamlet and how many great Hamlets there have been, and my understanding that the latest one to enter the equation of note is Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes. Well, Benedict Cumberbatch is flavor of the year. You know, I mean, there's a man who 5 or 6 years ago was working in British television and theater, and now he has become, against all the odds, of a man named Benedict Cumberbatch becoming world famous. He's become one of the most famous actors in our time, and I suspect that his schedule is fixed for, oh, maybe 3 years ahead, and people are lining up to get some of his time. And this is a great, great moment for him. He's just married too, so he has every reason to feel on top of the world, and one enjoys that for him. And I think he's a terrific actor. But he knows the tide could turn.
But there's something about that part, right? I mean, there's something that you, as you say, he has a schedule. He can work for the next 5 years in film, yeah, if he wants to. But he took out the time to play Hamlet. Bradley Cooper took out the time of a very busy film schedule to play the Elephant Man.
That's right. Well, I think that there are a lot of actors who do still believe in that thing we were talking about, the sort of extra distinction of the stage. And there are clearly certain parts, Hamlet is one of them, Lear for an older actor, that are major, major challenges. And you hear actors say, well, I'll wait until he's done a Hamlet before I really decide about him. And I think actors are well aware of that. And you know, Cumberbatch probably read Hamlet for the first time when he was 10, something like that, in school. And the part of him that wanted to act has had that date with destiny. It was always something that was going to come along, and he would probably do it for free. I'm not expecting him to, but it matters that much to him.
Well, the book is fascinating. It is Why Acting Matters, and it is published by Yale. David Thompson, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. What a great pleasure to speak to you.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that we could do it.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Why Acting Matters. It is published by Yale University Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.